Hey, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. At least to everybody in Canada. No, for you people in the U.S., we are not releasing this in late November. This is being recorded in early October. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our Canadian fans and co-hosts, Andrea and Fred.
Hey, thank you, Eric.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Fantastic.
All right. Yeah, Andrea, not so good?
I started the long weekend sick, so I don't know. I'm going to have to hunt down the child who did this to me.
Andrea's under
peppermint
the weather.
Come on.
It's there.
Be a trooper.
Drink lots of tea.
Trooper. Too funny.
Oh, the Star Wars puns. Oh, this is going to be a long episode. So we are back here with Outer Rim, and we have a lot to talk about. There's been a lot of stuff in the news, and normally this isn't a news show. We have Echo Base for that. And I highly recommend people check out Echo Base and catch all the news there. But some of this stuff is so prominent that we kind of feel an obligation to chime in and give our own thoughts on some of this stuff. And so what we're going to talk about in this episode, we've got the Bob Iger interview from a few weeks back. We haven't really touched on this. And some of the comments he made about what happened with Solo and the future of the Star Wars properties. There have been some increasingly well-substantiated rumors, or at least allegedly so, that Episode 9 might be getting split into two movies. We've got a little bit more on Resistance, and we have more information about the live-action series. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. So let's get the quick part out of the way first, just so we can cross it off the list. Resistance is airing tomorrow night as of this recording. By the time people are listening to this, it will have already aired, and people will have already seen it. So, Fred, what did you think?
For Resistance, what do I think about the episode that's coming out tomorrow?
Yes. Did you like it?
I liked it. It was amazing.
All right.
I was like, what is Eric talking about?
I laughed. I cried. It was better than Cats.
Eric,
I'm sorry, only old people will get that reference. All right, well, you know, there are rumors about time travel in Episode 9 too, so maybe this is appropriate.
I don't think Fred has that capability.
All right, so Resistance is coming out. There have been a couple of more featurettes that have dropped. I've seen one of them. I haven't seen the second one. But, you know, by this time, the show is out, so I'll go back and catch those probably after watching the show now. So episode one drops October 7th. There are descriptions available for episodes 1 through 4. And we're not going to spoil too much about the show descriptions, but you can find those online pretty much everywhere. October 14th is going to be the next episode, and it's going to be every week after that. I had thought there was going to be a gap between the first episode and the rest of the series, like they had done sometimes before with Rebels, but I guess not. I guess we're right into it.
See, at first I thought episode one was going to be a two-parter. Is that still true?
I don't know. See, if you look at information online, as far as the episode breakdown, it looks like the first one is going to be a two-parter. If you go to disney.wikia.com and go to the Star Wars Resistance page there, it shows the production code for episode one being 101/102.
Right. Yes, it does. Okay. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So we should be getting a double length episode for the pilot. And then every week after that, it'll be a half hour.
And for those of you who do want to be spoiled, if you go over to the IMDb page, they have an episode breakdown, and it shows some guest stars that are appearing in each episode.
Yes.
So that may be interest of you. But if you are going to be, you want to be secret, you don't want to know what's going on, you want to be spoiler free, we won't spoil that for you here.
As much as we may want to, yeah, we'll cooperate. The titles, though, I think we can give the titles. There's nothing spoilery in those. Of course, is The Recruit. We've kind of talked about that a little bit before with the overview of the show, obviously talking about Kaz. Then we've got The Triple Dark, Fuel for the Fire, and The High Tower. So, you know, Lou is at New York Comic Con right now. And apparently at New York Comic Con, they have a I think it's full scale replica of the Fireball.
Oh,
Kaz's
that's so
ship.
Cool.
And people can line up and sit in it and get their picture taken and stuff. There's not really, it looks like there's not really a cockpit as much as it is. There's just kind of a big opening and like an office chair that you can sit in. And then you sit in it and you take the picture from the front. So it looks like you've got the full fuselage of the ship. And then you stand up and walk out and the next person sits in. And, but it's kind of cool that you can get your picture taken in it. So hopefully Lou is doing that so that we can mock him later.
For Solo, they built a life-size production for the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And now they have another ship for Kaz. So I wonder what they're all going to bring to the Star Wars Celebration this April.
Everything.
Wahaha.
Well, you hope so.
I hope so.
For those who don't know, at Celebration, for the last two celebrations, this last year they had a kind of like a diorama sort of thing where you could sit on some speeder bikes and it looked like you were on Endor. There's a backdrop and everything, and you could get your picture taken there. They had a cantina, which you were not allowed to really go into. It was used primarily for interviews and things like that and for the Star Wars show. But it was a very authentic looking cantina. And in 2015, when we were doing the Force Cast, before the convention opened, the group of people from Rebel Scum and the Force Cast and the Force.net went into the canteen and we got, you know, we took our pictures and stuff in there until we got chased out. Apparently we did not, after all, have permission to be in there like we thought we did. Oops.
What's a press pass good for?
I know, right? Well, and we had exhibitor passes too. So, oh well.
To be fair, it is easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. Well, and we got the pictures this way, so score, you know, we got what we wanted. We're done. We need to leave. Oh, okay. That's fine. There's the droid builders, area where there's, of course, lots of droids you can get your pictures taken with, and there's cosplayers everywhere, but they also had a replica of Rey's speeder from episode 7 at the 2015 when you could sit on that and get a picture taken. They had the interior of what we later discovered was the Outrider, not the Millennium Falcon. But it looked kind of like it was supposed to be a replica of the Falcon. You could get your picture taken in that. They had kind of a hallway from Echo Base. I'm trying to think of what else they had. But yeah, if you go to Celebration, there are definitely some interesting photo ops there that you can get. So I imagine they're probably going to bring the Fireball there. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the cockpit of the Falcon. I don't know. If not, cool. I mean, the Outrider set was good enough that, I mean, it made for some really good photos. So even if they just brought that back, that would be good. And in the meantime, I'm very, very perturbed at both Lou and Tim and Shannon for going to New York Comic Con without us. Punks.
So I've been on Discord for well over a year. I have not seen a single invitation to come. Now that's on Lou.
I think you're right. Because he obviously got an invitation because he's going, so why didn't he then extend that to the rest of us?
Exactly.
Exactly. Of course, he's paying his own way. We didn't get we no longer get press passes, I think, for New York Comic Con. I don't know if I think Shannon applied for one. I don't know if she got it or not. I don't think so.
I don't think she did.
Yeah, at New York Comic Con, we used to get press passes for it, but then when it started getting really, really big, we're not quite that big a network ourselves. So, but that's okay. We understand. So, all right, well, let's move on to, let's talk about The Mandalorian next. This is the most recent piece of news. Probably not as controversial as the Bob Iger stuff, so we'll save that for last. But The Mandalorian apparently is going to be the title of the Jon Favreau-produced live-action television series.
I am so excited.
And there's a photo available of a person in Mandalorian armor walking through a set that looks kind of like a village. It looks like Mos Eisley, though that type of set could be anywhere. I say that primarily because I'm holding out hope that it's not actually on Tatooine, because
it's going to be there.
I'm done with Tatooine. No, it's not. It's somewhere else. I'm telling you. I promise. So Jon Favreau released this, I think, via Instagram post.
Yes, he did.
And it says The Mandalorian in kind of the bright yellow text on black background of the Star Wars opening crawls. It says, after the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travails of a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic. So what do you guys think of this?
First thoughts, I think this looks very different than... like Boba Fett is my first thought of a Mandalorian, right? Uh-huh. So that was kind of where I was going first. And then you read on a little bit more, then nope, this is going to be after Jango and Boba. Then I go to think next Mando should have been maybe Sabine. I think a lot of fans were looking for a connection to Rebels. So I hopefully, okay, obviously this, I'm assuming that this picture is of the star. It's not Sabine's look, so I'm assuming that maybe she could be tied in another way if she's still around in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I imagine there will be some sort of a tie-in between probably Sabine and then also Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because I mean they're teamed up now, right?
Yeah.
We could get some sort of follow-up from Rebels into this. Or maybe not, but I'm sure there's going to be some sort of an appearance or something. I'm sure it's going to happen at some point.
When they were first talking about having a live action series, I was really hoping that they were going to do like an X-Wing series or something like that. Yeah. Like
like
X-Wing series of books.
Rogue Squadron.
Yeah. So that was kind of my first thought. Then having this seems pretty cool. I'm pretty excited for what this could actually look like.
I have to wonder if they're going to recycle a lot of the underworld scripts that they had.
You know, they might just do that. They have a ton of stuff written.
Yeah, apparently they had like 100 scripts either done or mostly outlined. So there's a lot of potential content there. And there seems to be a big overlap in the concept, too.
Yeah.
So, Andrea, what do you think about this?
I'm pretty excited, especially because John is going to have a lot of directors that it's their first time being in the Star Wars franchise. Mm-hmm. So you have Deborah Chow, who did Jessica Jones, and that's been pretty fantastic. Mr. Robot, that's also been pretty good. This one was really interesting. Bryce Dallas Howard, she was in Jurassic World. So I'm really excited to see how that's going to play out. We have Taika, who did Thor Ragnarok. Again, that's a lot of action. That's what the Mandalorians are all about. And because you do have Dave Filoni being part of this... The Mandalorian, we're going to see probably ties to Clone Wars, Rebels. So that's going to be pretty exciting because we might be getting, I'm losing my voice. we might be getting a little tidbits of what those other TV shows had to offer now in a live action setting.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting too, because I'm curious. The target audience for the animated stuff obviously skews a little younger. And in fact, that they've said that the target audience for the Resistance is actually younger than I expected. It's like around the 12-year-old or younger, 8 to 12, I think they said. But looking back, you could argue the same thing about Rebels and Clone Wars as well. Live action shows typically seem to trend a little older. So I'm curious about the overlap between Rebels and this and how they're going to handle any sort of transition like that. You mentioned the list of directors that just got released in the last couple of days, and it's it's a really interesting list. Also, Greg Fraser was director of photography for Rogue One, which he did a phenomenal job. I mean, it really felt like a war film. He captured a lot of what you would want to see out of combat. And he's going to be the director of photography for this series, not just for an episode, but he's going to be the guy for the series. That's really cool. I mean, to me, that's exciting. People often ignore the DP or overlook them, and they've actually got a lot of control over how things get presented visually. So I'm really excited about that, too. Oh, go ahead, Fred.
I was just going to say, I thought Rogue One was brilliant. The way that they shot that really pulled you into the story.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I think that when it comes to the DP work, that may have been one of the most impressive of any of the Star Wars films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's great news.
Well, and the other thing, I mean, knowing the description of the Mandalorians, that they have such good fighting abilities and stuff like that, we will see a lot of action in this show. And it's really interesting, the budget that they have. It's just as big as Game of Thrones or the new Lord of the Rings show that they're doing for Amazon. So that's pretty exciting, because they could do so much with that budget that they have. So it's around $10 million per episode. And they are saying that the first season is going to be 10 episodes. So that's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, this budget, I mean, they've got a lot of leeway. They can fire a lot of directors and redo the entire episodes over and over.
Let's not go the solo route, please.
Now, you mentioned something. It's 10 episodes. The director list only lists 8 episodes, with Taika Waititi doing the 8th episode that is allegedly he's doing the final episode. So now there are rumors that they may have shrunk the season from 10 to 8.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Possibly for budgetary reasons, but.
Are you either of you familiar with Discovery, the new Star Trek show? Have either of you watched it?
Yes.
Just to give you a point of reference, each of those episodes was 8 to 8.5 million.
Oh. Interesting. Now, there is a lot of effects driven stuff in that show. I mean, there are so many effect shots.
I think for this, it's going to be more not visual effects. What is it called? Explosions.
Practical effects.
Yeah, it's going to be more practical. Yeah, obviously they'll probably fly somewhere, but I think it's going to be centered in Mandalore in Mandalore. And in the moon, probably.
I don't know how much of... I get the impression that this might not focus a lot on Mandalore itself, nor on the Mandalorians. And this has actually been a really big talking point in the community. People talking about, you know, how much are we going to get to see of Mandalore, of the other Mandalorians, or is this going to be kind of a lone gunman sort of thing? I get the impression it's going to be more of the lone gunman sort of thing, following him around the universe. But I hope that they do have some sort of a backstory they present and a focus on Mandalore, because that's something a lot of us want to see more of.
Yeah, that's what I want to see for sure.
I have a feeling that it's going to open up. The first couple episodes is just going to be focused on him or her. Mm-hmm. And then they'll probably bring in Mandalore at a future point, probably later in season one.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Probably. I imagine that they're going to do something to build a larger story arc and some big cliffhangers for the second season. And I think that that's maybe where some of that's going to tie in. Looking at the picture of the armor, my first thought on this was that I was not as much of a fan of the aesthetic, but that's a personal preference sort of thing, because I like the cooler colors, like the blues and the purples and the greens and stuff like this. This one has more of a rustic look to it. It's almost like rust colored. It's got the kind of the faded burgundies and the tans and stuff. So it's not that there's
all
a problem
very
with the
shiny too.
Armor itself. It's, well, if you look at this versus Jango Fett, Jango Fett looks very much more like the 1940s, 1950s Flash Gordon type of Rocket Man. This one looks more like the old Western sort of Clint Eastwood style thing. And even if you look at some of the armor pieces, they're almost leather-like in color. In addition to, it looks like a leather bandolier. It has a very leather look to it, even though it's obviously metal armor. And I think that that probably implies a little bit of the tone of the series, too. I think it's going to be very Western-like.
Tatooine.
Yeah, I know. I hear
this
ya.
Picture does look like Tatooine. I will give it that.
Hush.
But yeah, if you look closer at the photo, you see all the colors are like, yeah, like what you said, were muted browns, tans, dark green. But the helmet is so shiny. It just seems like it sticks out.
True.
So
this is before the explosions, guys.
That's, you know,
do you not see the sand reflecting from the helmet, Eric?
Hush.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Hush. I refuse to zoom in now.
No,
but you bring up a good point, though. I think that if you go back to a lot of shows, some of my favorite TV shows are ones where you get introduced to the characters and they go through radical character changes over time. And by the end of the series, they are completely different characters. Babylon 5 is one that has extensive character changes between the start and the finish. Yeah. Lost is another favorite show of mine. And that is the same sort of thing through Lost. I know that Lost is a bit controversial, but I like shows where there's a lot of change over time. And I imagine we're going to see changes to the armor over time, because Mandalorian armor seems to be pretty modular. And you're talking about the shiny helmet. I have no doubt that we're going to end up getting, you know, dings and scuff marks and dents. And I think that there's going to be a very stark visual representation of some of the changes the character goes through, you know, two or three seasons into the show versus what we see at the beginning here. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'm very excited. Yes.
Now, that being said, he could have just polished his helmet after getting out of a Sarlacc pit, because he does look like he's on Tatooine.
He's going to kick us out of the show because
of
you.
I am going to. Remember, I control the audio editing. I can grab syllables from different sentences and make you say anything I want you to say. So, I could even piece it together to make you say Andrea is awesome. I can do it.
He never says that.
I know, but I will do it. Don't mess with me.
That would be nice, though.
There are other planets in the galaxy, you know.
Like Tatooine.
And Jedha.
All right.
Definitely not going to be Hoth.
Maybe it's Jakku. I don't know.
Well, filming on this probably, I guess, has already started by the time people are listening to this, early this month. So I don't know. This is not coming as soon as I would like, but at least it's coming, and we're starting to get quite a bit of reveals about it, at least. That's good. And I imagine that we're getting the initial stuff now, and by the time we hit Celebration in the spring, hopefully we're going to get a little bit more. We're going to get some footage. Maybe some good content by the time we hit April. And this takes place apparently about 3 years after Return of the Jedi, right? At least that's the last specific thing that I remember hearing. I know the thing that Jon Favreau posted is a little more vague, but
3 years is what I've been hearing as well.
So you know who else we're going to see? We're going to see Boba Fett.
Do you think so? I was just going to ask that path.
Yeah, do you guys think?
Do you think he's related to Boba, or do you think he's just going to meet him? Do you think he's against him? What do you think?
Here's what I think. So first of all, for those who don't know, in Legends, Boba Fett survived the Sarlacc pit. Legends is now no longer canon. So people went straight to the source and asked George Lucas. George Lucas says that as far as he is concerned, Boba Fett survived. However, George Lucas no longer works for Lucasfilm, so that's not canon either. So it kind of depends on what you consider to be the definitive source on this. For those who look to George Lucas and what his intentions were, Boba Fett is still alive. So if we go with that, I think it would be interesting to have Boba Fett kind of more in an Obi-Wan sort of role. Maybe he's...
I was just thinking that, yeah, mentor.
Yeah, yep. The Sarlacc pit didn't kill him, but maybe he's damaged enough physically that he isn't able to continue as a bounty hunter. So maybe he's not... I mean, so if they do this, though, I hope it's not like a focus. I hope it's like an every now and then he goes and sees Boba and talks to him a little bit, and then he goes off. I don't want... If it's going to be about this character... And if he's not secretly Boba Fett, then because, you know, that could happen too. Then I want it to be about this character, and I want, but kind of like what I've said about the sequel trilogies and stuff. Yeah, I want to see Luke and Leia and Han again, but I don't want it to be about them. I want it to be about the new characters. And that's why a lot of people have complained about Luke not getting the treatment he deserved in episode 8 and it not having enough of a focus. I haven't cared because I felt like we got a lot of Luke, and I thought that they did some character development with him that was, I felt, was interesting, but it's not about him. It's about Rey. I kind of feel the same way about this. I want it to be about this Mandalorian. And if they have Boba Fett, that's great, but use him kind of like they used Ahsoka in Rebels, which is to say sparingly.
Yeah.
Plus then it makes it more special when he does appear.
So. Yeah, you don't want to lose the focus of that main character that you're trying to establish by making all the fans be so hyped about Boba coming back and all that stuff. You are right.
Right.
I think that it's a fine line of like, okay, let's please the fans, but also start developing a new story.
Right, right.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if they did like a team-up episode, like they had to go get one group of guys and he couldn't do it by himself and he grabbed Boba and off they went. That'd be cool, but yeah, don't bring him in every episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, we probably will have some sort of ensemble of characters. I doubt that this is just going to be like just this one guy.
Or girl.
You know, I was thinking about that, but then let me go back to...
If I look at the picture, that looks like a man. But again, we cannot say anything until helmets are off.
I take that back. I had said at one point that I was referring to the character as a he because I thought that at some point Jon Favreau had done so himself. So that's what I was going by. But looking back at the Instagram post, there are no gender-related pronouns in here. So I was incorrect on that. So it could be a she, unless there's some other point somewhere where... Jon Favreau has referenced one way or the other.
The article that I'm referring to is on IO9.
Okay.
And they say, there's a paragraph, I'll just read it out. So now we have our look at the lone gunfighter and what a look it is. We still don't know the gender of the character, which is obviously by design. But no matter what, this is an imposing, confident presence with a great mix of Mandalorian armor and personal functional additions.
Excellent.
So we
don't even know that about the character. This could be Sabine.
Mm-hmm. It could. Absolutely could be. It could be her undercover doing a hit. Like, her armor is going to be famous. She's probably one of the most predominant houses in all of Mandalore, so everybody would know who she is, and everyone against her would know who she is.
Right.
So if she needed to do an undercover bounty, this is how she would do it.
Well, this is definitely undercover. This is about as far away from Sabine's style as you could get.
Exactly.
And Sabine's not a, quote, bounty hunter. And we have to keep that in mind, too. I mean, this
right.
A gunfighter is a term that Jon Favreau used to describe the character and the IO9 article you referenced, too. So that is... you could be that and be a bounty hunter. Sabine is definitely not a bounty hunter, but I don't think there's been any mention of bounty hunter in regards to this character, not officially. So it could be a mercenary, could be a hero. I mean, he could be a good guy who just goes and fixes problems for people. He could be a fixer. So gunfighter is the only thing that we really know about this character's role, right?
True. I keep, just going back to Boba Fett, obviously. So I have to unwind that.
Yeah, that's the thing. When we see Mandalorians and the armor, we have very, very particular points of reference that we keep going back to. Boba Fett, Jango Fett, the Clone Wars references in Mandalore, and then, of course, Sabine in Rebels. So we're always very quick to make those associations because that's what we have, because the Mandalorians are very distinct. And they're probably the most distinct non-Jedi characters in Star Wars lore. So maybe we're going to harken back to one of those, or maybe this will be yet a new distinction that we'll be going forward with. We don't know yet.
My only hope is that the character development is amazing. And if it is a woman, it's not because of an agenda. I hope it's because they have established an amazing character.
Right.
And they're not just like, oh, we're just going to make it a woman because then that's just going to attract more people and stuff like that. Like, we'll see how it goes, but.
Yeah. It's got to be something more than a gimmick.
Yes.
But I don't feel like we've had that problem with Star Wars so far when it comes to female characters. I don't think they've ever really fallen into a trap of saying, hey, we could get a bigger audience and increase the fandom if we did this with the character and made a character female instead of male. Like, I feel like they've been genuine about the characters so far. And so I share your concern about that. That's something that we always kind of fear a little bit when it comes to this sort of
any show.
Shows. Show or any movie. We want diversity and we want inclusion, but we want the diversity to be there because it's natural and because it's genuine, not because people are checking things off of a list. Because every time they do that, it comes across as fake and wrote.
And there are shows that unfortunately do it. I'm not saying it because Star Wars has a tendency to do it. It's just new shows sometimes try to check off a checklist. And I don't want that to be this because isn't it the first live action show that they're doing for Star Wars? So
if you don't count the Ewok movies.
Yes. We're not talking about that one.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll get some sort of look at it at Celebration. And in fact, with the timing of everything, that could be one of the bigger things we get from Celebration. That could be one of the big, big reveals. So, but let's move on to Bob Iger, because as we're looking forward in Star Wars and at what's coming down the road, obviously we have The Mandalorian. We are now experiencing Resistance, but we haven't really talked much about the films and what that looks like. So Bob Iger did an interview back in late September, and I think Hollywood Reporter was the primary source on this. There's a quote from what he said here, and I want to read this to you here. This is from Bob Iger, who is the guy at Disney. He is the head honcho. "I made the timing decision. And as I look back, I think the mistake that I made, I take the blame, was a little too much, too fast. You can expect some slowdown, but that doesn't mean we're not going to make films. JJ is busy making 9. We have creative entities, including Benioff and Wise, who are developing sagas of their own, which we haven't been specific about. And we are just at the point where we're going to start making decisions about what comes next after JJ's. But I think we're going to be a little bit more careful about volume and timing. And the buck stops here on that." So the takeaway from this is, number one, the rumors about Bob Iger stepping in and controlling the timing of when Solo was released, especially after all the changes that had to be made and Lucasfilm wanting to move it back to a December release, Bob Iger is taking the blame for it. publicly and clearly. I mean, there's no way to misinterpret this. He uses the words, "I take the blame." So that's pretty direct. So it's on him, both Solo's release date being so close to episode 8, the unwillingness to move it after the problems they had. And there was another related rumor that Lucasfilm asked for more money to do better promotion of the film, and Iger said no. Now, that part, that last part is not part of this, but it's been so closely intertwined with all of the other reports that we had heard up to this point that Bob Iger is now confirming, that it seems natural to probably include that as well. Though he didn't touch on that in this interview, I think that's probably a little more inside baseball than he wanted to go into for this. But so that's good in the sense that for the people who are concerned about Kathleen Kennedy and the decisions that she's been making, this confirms that these mistakes, and they, in my opinion, they were definitely mistakes. I know there are people out there saying, oh, well, I don't think that mistakes really were made. No, I believe that these were clearly some business decisions that were mistakes, mm-hmm. but they were not made by Kathleen Kennedy. And I don't worship at the altar of Kathleen Kennedy. I don't think she's some perfect goddess who never makes any wrong decisions or anything. I'm not some fanboy who's not willing to make critiques when something goes wrong, but I don't think that she's made any substantial errors so far, other than perhaps not more closely monitoring the production of Solo early on and catching the problems sooner.
We can elaborate all we want or guess or whichever you want to call it. We were not mm-hmm. in that boardroom. We don't know what conversations took place. Did right. Kathleen try to have this moved? Or did Bob just say, you're doing it by this day, and she just accepted it?
Yeah.
We don't know. Like, maybe she did try. Maybe she begged and pleaded, and he just held his ground. We don't know. So it could be taken many different ways. I'm happy that he came out and took the blame and took the hit and admitted it. That gives a little credence to his role in all of this and gives a little less pressure off Kathleen. I know everyone in the community has been targeting her for all of this.
Yeah.
So but why now, that's though? Not true.
Like, if we're doing it, if we're saying that, okay, she took full force of everybody's wrath mm-hmm. because of this, why wasn't the statement made earlier?
Well, that's up to Bob Iger, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I think that it would have been good to make the statement much earlier. I mean, this is September.
That's the thing, like, right now, are people do they have their pitchforks ready, their torches lit up because they're going to go after him? No. And I think that Kathleen, again, and I'm in the same boat as you are, Eric. I'm not a fangirl. I don't have a shrine of her. I don't like defend everything that she's done. Mm-hmm. But is he getting as much as she did based on those decisions? I don't know. But
no, he's not. There's a website. I don't know if people out there are familiar with it or not. You might want to write it down. It's called youtube.com. And no, he's
tell
not
me more.
Getting. Yeah, it's a little independent site that.
Okay.
He's not getting anywhere near the wrath that she is. And it continues even now after this. And it's sad because I think that, I mean, sure, there are legitimate points to be made about decisions that she's made one way or the other. But I mean, my gosh, she hasn't shot herself in the foot. She hasn't done anything so bad to, I mean, I think that if you want to sit there and complain about things that Kathleen Kennedy's done wrong, you really have to nitpick. I mean, you've really got to get into some trivial, not quite petty things, but not too far away from being petty. I mean, it's the complaints about the different films that people have been going over online are, I think, more, if you want to get on Kennedy about it, you've got to get on the fact that she let it happen. Not, I mean, she wasn't responsible for the creative decisions in episode 8, for example. So if you're complaining about how Luke was treated in episode 8, if you're complaining about the lack of a reveal about who Ray's parents were, or the presumed reveal that they were nobodies. I mean, when you start getting into the particular things that you didn't like about the movies, she wasn't the person who came up with those. Yeah, she's in charge of the company and let those things go through. But I mean, let's look at the sources of the things you're complaining about, whether it be writers or directors or actors or whatever. And even then, I think the complaints go way too far, but that's a whole different topic. My point is Kathleen Kennedy, in my opinion, has done a good job running Lucasfilm. Kathleen Kennedy should continue running Lucasfilm. Kathleen Kennedy should continue making, for the most part, the types of decisions that she's been making. I think that we've run into problems with, number one, the relationship between Disney and Lucasfilm. For the most part, Disney has been pretty hands-off, but then when they do step in, because they've been so hands-off, they're like, well, no, this is the hill we're going to die on. This is the one thing we want you to do. We want you to still release Solo on time. Or they also went through and got new directors for the films. Each one of these films, Episode 7, Episode 8, Rogue One, Solo, these are all different directors than what we had before, where it was just the one guy who did the whole saga. Or I know he brought in different directors for Empire and Return of the Jedi, but even then he was on set on a day-to-day basis. I mean, they were almost just front men for him. So this is a whole different sort of world that she's got to figure out. You've got to give her a little bit of patience when it comes to trial and error to create a whole new version of Lucasfilm. That's not an easy thing to do, and it could have gotten run into the ground. We could have had absolute disasters. And had the actual destruction that a lot of these haters online have been whining about, I mean, that could have been real, and it wasn't. She's kept the boat afloat. She's done a good job. And I'm glad to see Bob Iger have the integrity to step up and say, I made the timing decision. And he directly calls it a mistake. I think the mistake that I made, I take the blame, was a little too much too fast. That's good. I mean, I'm glad we're getting this transparency. And I'm glad he's taking responsibility for making a mistake. And I appreciate that from him.
I think part of the delay in him stepping forward was just to let the dust settle from everything. Let the fans calm down. Let the Star Wars upheaval just mellow out a little bit. And then he can come forward and say his piece. Unfortunately, the damage has already been done against Kathleen Kennedy.
Exactly. But
in the same breath, he and her signed a 3-year extension of her contract to be CEO of Lucasfilm. So he's giving her credence and saying that, hey, I think you're doing a good job. I want you back for 3 more years.
Yeah. And which is great news, by the way. That's another news item here, is the extension of her contract, which, again, I think that's good. I think that overall, yeah, there are going to be some bumps in the road. There's going to be some speed bumps, and we get over them and we press forward. And I think that overall, Kathleen Kennedy's done a really good job, and I believe that she's going to continue that. So this extension to her contract is phenomenal news, I think. But that being said, though, I do kind of agree with what Andrea was saying about the timing of this. I think there's a benefit in letting the dust settle a little bit from fan blow up online and trying to not take the bellows to the flames there. But on the other hand, it seems like this has been so long that the hatred for Kathleen Kennedy has just continued to grow and grow in the group of haters online that are a small but vocal group. I was kind of hoping it would die out by now.
Somebody's name for years, and then next thing you know, you're like, oh, never mind, they didn't do anything. it's crappy. Like, how much trauma is she probably, the lady, has endured because of some people? Like, I don't know. Whatever, he admitted to it.
Hopefully not. Okay, hopefully fine. She stays off of the internet and stays away from all that stuff.
I hope so. I don't disagree. If he stood up a little bit sooner, it would have been better, obviously, but at least he did.
Yeah,
but no, you can also play devil's advocate and be like, okay, yeah. Well, if he would have stepped up sooner, everybody would have been like, oh, you're just covering for her. So again, like, you can't really win with people.
Yeah,
that's true. So. And if he had stepped up, and even if people didn't think he was just doing it to cover for her, I think we'd still have the same types of YouTube videos being posted today. I think people just, they want to hate. And I think that the hate gets them... It gets them clicks. It gets them hits on their videos. And you know, I think that there's a market for hate right now. There's a market for it. There's a way to monetize it. And I think that this is an area where there's such a huge fan following and a potential audience for it that it makes it even easier to market. I would dare say there are people who are probably out there hating on Star Wars and posting YouTube videos that really don't even know much about Star Wars. They just saw an opportunity to get into it and use this as a vehicle.
And that being said, do they know that she reports to Bob Iger?
Yeah, I don't even know. It's like, I was really hoping that maybe by now the hatred and stuff would have kind of died out and the dust would have settled. But I think the fact that it hasn't further indicates that it's people who just want to actively hate on stuff. It's not that there's an actual issue, because all the different sides of the issues about things like Episode 8, they've already been presented by now. So now we can move on to other things. But the hatred continues on literally a daily basis. I go to YouTube, and of course it gives you suggestions on different videos and stuff, and it's based on other things you viewed. So even though...
So you're the one watching those hate videos.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, though. If you watch anything Star Wars related, even just the Star Wars show from Lucasfilm, you also get all of these other bozos in your recommendations feed. And there are new videos every single day by these people. It hasn't ended, and that makes me believe that they're whining for the sake of whining. They want an audience, and, you know, they're the new... 15, 20 years ago, AM radio was a bunch of these local talk show hosts and conspiracy theory nuts, and you know, they built an audience from getting people all worked up about nonsense. This is the new version of that. Right.
Yeah. Well, I love to love Star Wars, and I'm going to try to avoid all that kind of stuff. I don't see the point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see the point for them and the fact that they can monetize it. But again, if that's why you're doing it, then you don't even matter, dude.
Nope.
All right. Well, so let's look at what else he said. He said that they are going to slow down, the releases of things. They're not, to my knowledge, and this is official as well, there have been no cancellations of anything. So everything that has been officially announced is still coming as of when this interview happened in September. Now, there have been rumors on the internet since then about the cancellation of the Kenobi movie, the Boba Fett movie, and there continues to be, there's a whole war going on right now against Rian Johnson, and has been for a while. And a lot of it was from this one YouTuber who started posting all this stuff about Rian Johnson's trilogy getting canceled. Rian Johnson got on Twitter and said, "No, dude, we're still here and work's actually progressing on it. And movement's actually happening. Haven't been canceled." And, somehow a bunch of other people jumped in and started accusing Rian Johnson of hating on this YouTuber and created this whole war around it. So the Rian Johnson rumors continue to happen regardless. But the more recent one that might actually be true is that Rian Johnson's trilogy might end up happening after the Benioff and Weiss series. I keep wanting to say trilogy. Technically, it was announced as a series of films.
Series.
So,
I don't care which order that they come out in. I really don't. I just want more content.
Yeah.
Now, Bob Iger stood up and said, nothing's being canceled. It's just going to be delayed or slowed down or whatever word you want to use. It's coming. I'm not worried about it.
What do you think about the release so far? I mean, there was controversy, and we covered this when we were on the Forcecast going all the way back to, probably 2013, about the possibility of oversaturation for Star Wars. So we've got one movie per year, and then we had Solo come out so recently after Episode 8. Now we've got basically a Star Wars channel coming with multiple TV series. What do you think about the pacing so far?
For me, anything that's on TV versus what's in the movies is two completely different things.
I agree.
I don't think anything that's on the television, and then that being said, anything that's animation versus live action is two very different things again. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a lot of people that just will not be interested in watching animation just because it's animation.
Right.
The live action series, this will be the first one that Star Wars has done. So I don't know how that's going to fall. Maybe that will be more closely watched like a movie. So that'll be interesting. For the movies themselves, yes, I think Solo came out too early. I wish they would have done a December release. I think one movie per year is ample.
Do you think it's too much? Do you think one per year is too much?
That's where I was kind of humming and hawing. Is like, do they do every 18 months? Do they do every other year? I would personally love to see them stick with a December release every year. I think that would do really well. Star Wars Christmas.
Yeah, that's what I love.
Yeah.
I really don't think it's an oversaturation. And I was talking to Fred about this before we started recording. I just think that the release of Solo was shot in the foot because it had Infinity War and
Deadpool 2. Yeah, let's not forget Deadpool. Gotta have Deadpool in there. Yeah.
But like, it's not because people are getting tired of Star Wars. You have to take a look at what was going on around it. If I had to choose between Solo, between Avengers, and between Deadpool, Solo would be at the bottom because I already know the character. I already know that how it's going to be like.
Right.
So I would put that at the bottom. I really don't think it's an oversaturation. Yes, I would like to keep it a December thing because that's just how it's been for the last couple of movies. But I don't want people to think that, we're stopping production of these things and we're going to extend it to every other year because of the failure of Solo. I think people need to look at everything that was going on around that release. And it's not just the release. It's all the controversy that was there while Solo was being produced.
Right.
That scared a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, with the other films, Avengers was something that was, they've been teasing for 10 years now. It's a single movie that has been anxiously awaited as part of one of the largest film franchises in movie history. And then you've got that up against a prequel about a character and his Wookiee companion that, you know, as people said, I know they're going to still be alive at the end of the movie. So whatever the stakes are, those stakes are for other people.
Yep.
So I'll wait and see it on DVD. And listen, that is logical. I understand that sentiment. I would not have agreed with it personally.
All that being said, it was still, we caught our breath after Episode 8.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was. So, I agree with you guys. It was definitely, it was definitely too soon. And keep in mind, we call Han Solo a failure. Box office numbers wise, it was a success. The failure happens behind the scenes in the sense that the budget got so inflated that the success at the box office ended up in a financial loss for Lucasfilm when you sit down and do the number crunching. And the failure from the audience perspective, a lot of that was a perceived failure that happened in part due to internet hype and in part due to all of the rumors and the talking and stuff about the production problems, and then in part because of the number crunching and in the financial records and stuff like that. The movie was good, in my opinion.
I enjoyed it.
It did better at the box office than other movies that are considered successes.
Yes.
So let's keep that in mind.
It just wasn't as profitable as other Star Wars movies.
Yes, it failed to make a profit. But in part, that was because it had an arbitrarily doubled budget because they had to reshoot the entire thing.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, my personal take on it, I'm on the fence because I'm a Star Wars fan. And so having one Star Wars movie a year wouldn't bother me. But on the other hand, looking back at other franchises that I enjoyed but wasn't a mega fan of, like the Harry Potter movies or things like that, like a movie every year kind of felt like, okay, well, now it's the obligatory Harry Potter movie we get every Thanksgiving or whatever. It kind of felt like, I don't know. I think one every other year is definitely fine. One every year I'm on the fence, I'm mostly okay with, but objectively or in an attempt to be objective, I can understand where that might start to feel like oversaturation to some people.
For me, it's all about quality versus the quantity. If the quality's not there, you can give me 100 Star Wars movies and I'm just not going to care about it. But if there is a quality and you're going to do every other year because the quality is going to be amazing, then I can live with that. I'm not going to enjoy some Christmases, but I can live with it.
You're going to have a horrible Christmas because there was no Star Wars movie released that year.
I really think that if they're just writing to write to produce every single year and they're not getting anything that's authentic, that's new, that's galaxy changing, then it's pointless. But if they're actually taking the time to develop a new story, another place, another character, then that's where it matters. And again, quality over quantity.
I think what I hear Eric saying is that if we go to a 2-year production movie release, that it would bring back the event.
Yes.
Instead of just going to a movie, it's now a special event again. And that's what Star Wars really is the event.
Yes. When I think
fans coming together.
When I think back of going to see Star Wars movies, I have fond memories of, and it's not about this, so don't get me wrong, but I have fond memories of waiting in line with people. Mm-hmm. Even after you could buy tickets online and don't have to wait in line anymore, I have fond memories of still waiting in line anyway to get good seats. And now that you can reserve your seats even, it's taking more and more away from the hanging out and waiting in line experience, but there's still something about the event of going to see I'm not just going to see a movie. I'm going to see a Star Wars movie. And there was something about that. Friends took days off of work and they got together and you know, there were parties and they would rewatch the previous movies and they still do that. But I mean, I'm pretty plugged into the fan community and things like that. And I hear less about that now than I used to. I think it's not as much of an event, and I wouldn't mind getting some of that back. Does it matter at the end of the day? Well, not really, because what matters is what's on that DVD that you're going to be watching for the next 20 years. And I say, if you don't know what a DVD is, kids, go ask your parents. It's that old technology that we used to use to watch movies.
I will text my parents about that. Mom and Dad, what is a DVD?
We know what you're doing. We know you're playing Force Commander. Don't try to convince us you're doing something else with your phone.
Don't tell anybody.
See, she holds up her screen and it's on right there. I caught you.
But does she know what a VHS player is?
Yeah. I do. I used to have some. It's funny because I went to my friend's house yesterday. This is so random, and this is Fred's fault, but she had a VHS, and it said Armageddon. I was laughing so much. It was funny. It was cute.
The good old days of worrying about whether you've watched Star Wars too much based on how much the quality had degraded from the videotape.
Yes.
Like, you go over to a friend's house, wow, dude, you watch this a lot, don't you? Because this looks like crap. Yeah. So back to the quality. The quote was, he's going to focus on, quote, quality rather than just volume. Now, for me personally, I see the TV, the streaming channel. I guess we have to stop saying TV because a lot of people are going to watch these on their iPads and their phones and stuff like that. But the streaming channel allows for volume without oversaturation. Fred, what you were talking about a few minutes ago, there's a big difference between television viewing and movie viewing.
Yes.
And television is the place where you can release a ridiculous amount of content and it not feel like oversaturation, because the consumption for television viewing, you know, you can do that at a party with friends, or you can sit alone on your couch in your underwear watching TV. Like, it doesn't have to be an event, and it can be anytime you want. It can be in between other day-to-day activities. It's the type of thing where the quantity doesn't kill it. So I think that if they are considering canceling anything, or if they are considering, well, maybe after Solo, we don't want to do these movies with these great big huge budgets because we might not, you know, we might have problems with profit or whatever. I mean, there were some comments made back after Solo came out about reducing the budget for some of these anthology films. Put them on the streaming channel. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Netflix, for example, is making a killing right now on their original content, and it's good. They've got good stuff. You can do a lot by releasing movies straight to streaming.
Do you think they can make the same volume of money from an anthology movie being released in the box office versus their streaming service?
I think it all depends on, I mean, when it comes down to it, it's more about the profit than the revenue, right? Yeah. It's all about the amount you bring in versus what it costs you to make. And I think that distribution on streaming, they obviously save millions of dollars. I mean, it costs money to actually distribute a film to theaters, even digitally. You're saving on the advertising budget. Doesn't have to be the same because you don't have to get people to leave their house like you do when they go see a movie. So you have to market that a bit more aggressively. You don't see commercials on Monday Night Football for the latest Netflix film.
You don't have to pay for Cineplex Odeon or whoever else to host it.
Yep. So you get all of the revenue and not just a cut of it. And that revenue continues over time. Now, the difference is you're not getting revenue per viewing either. I mean, you're getting subscription.
Yeah.
And so it's a different marketing model. I am not enough of an economist to really be able to break those things down, I don't think. But I have to say that there's got to be money in it, or companies like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu would not be so aggressively chasing this. And I mean, Netflix, I think, just doubled their budget for next year for original content, which was already an insane budget. And I think they literally doubled it for next year.
Wow.
There's got to be money there. So can they make as much as they could in the theaters? I don't know, but I think they could make enough money from it for it to be profitable enough for them to continue doing it.
I'm curious to know how much. So let's take an arbitrary number, $500 million. I think that would be a pretty successful anthology movie. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much money they would make from the box office in profit, so net earnings, versus what it would be from like a Netflix or their streaming channel.
Yeah.
I have no idea what those numbers would look like or if we could even get them, but
I've mentioned a few other times on Random Chatter and some of the other podcast shows. I tore a page out of Entertainment Weekly years and years and years ago, decades ago now. And so that I could keep it, because it broke down the numbers from a film in a way that was just mind blowing. And I can't find, of course, because I ripped it out as a sheet of paper, I kept it for like a year or two. And then after that, it got lost. But I got to see if I can find it again. It was on the Mel Gibson movie Ransom. And mm-hmm. any reference of numbers I'm making after this, I'm making it up. Okay. So just bear with me. But I want to say it had a budget of something like 30 million and it brought in 90 or 120 million at the box office or something like that. And it lost money. And people were like, well, no, it couldn't have lost money. It was a success. If, you know, 120 million minus 30 million, that's a profit. And they broke it down line by line between the distribution costs, which a lot of people don't think about, but okay, that's obvious. The marketing.
Yep.
But then a lot of other things. So you have to pay the director. You have to pay the actors who make money, regardless of how much it makes at the theater, in this case, Mel Gibson. Then there's the studio fee for the production of the movie. Then there's the studio fee for the distributing studio. Then there's another studio fee that they had for some other, like, not the people who actually made the film, but other studios that chipped in money to help produce it or something to help cover some of the costs up front, but wanted to get money back on that. And just fee after fee after fee, fees for the lot where they filmed it. And it broke it down to a point where they were in the red. Mm-hmm. So the secondary and tertiary actors on the movie who were only going to get paid based on percentages or points from the profit, they didn't get paid for the movie. There were actors in that movie who got paid zero.
Wow.
And it's because the movie was in the red. So there's a lot more going on behind the scenes. I'm going to have to get on the internet, and I bet there's, if not that particular breakdown, there's got to be something similar out there. And if anybody finds it or knows of one, shoot us a link in the Discord channel or send me an email or something, because I would love to have another example of this that we could use. Because it's really sobering. It's interesting to see how what we think of when we think of box office results and profits for these movies, it's not how it actually works. And there are people saying, yeah, okay, Solo didn't do that great, but you know, it still brought in money for Lucasfilm. It's not like they lost money on it. No, I believe they truly did lose money at the end of the day on Solo. Oh, I have no doubt of that.
Yeah.
They'll probably make it up through streaming service and DVD sales and Blu-ray sales and whatnot. But
yeah,
I don't doubt that it either got cut really close or if they're still in the red.
Yeah. I think Lucasfilm probably is able, because they do so much of their own stuff in-house, some of those fees are probably not relevant. But I still think that at the end of the day, they took a hit prior to home video mm-hmm. release. Anyway, but the thing is, I think that at the end of the day, though, if you're concerned about the volume and you want to look at maybe reducing the production costs of some things, I think that those two concerns are mitigated by having the streaming service. I think that that's where the streaming service is really going to help them. Put up as much as you want on the streaming service. In fact, if you have too little content on the streaming service, you're not going to get as many subscribers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
People are going to look at that and wonder, well, is it really worth the X number of dollars a month I have to pay? Because they're going to be comparing it to things like Netflix that has everything in the world.
Yep.
I mean, even Hulu, I have to look at Hulu and say, okay, Hulu is not that expensive. It's like, what, $8 a month or something. But is there actually stuff there I want to watch? Because a lot of the content is stuff I'm getting on my cable service anyway, and I've got on my DVR. Is there really enough else there to justify the cost for me? And I'm thinking about canceling my Hulu service now. But it's going to be the same thing for the Star Wars streaming service. The three of us are going to get it because it's Star Wars. But is the average person going to get it?
A Disney streaming service that's going to have all of Disney, all of Marvel, all of Lucasfilm products?
I believe so, but it's still, there's still going to need to be enough new content coming forward from these things. If you look at the Disney content, a lot of it that's the classic Disney content that people want, they've already owned on not just DVD, but VHS before that, The Little Mermaid and Aladdin and whatever else. You know, we've already got copies upon copies of those things. The current stuff, a lot of what's on the Disney channels are Disney XD, Disney Junior, a lot of it's stuff for kids. So for the adults to pay for the service, if you don't have kids, what new content is coming out for that? So yeah, you've got the Marvel stuff and you've got Star Wars, but
what about all television shows under Fox, all television shows under ABC?
Well, see, that's the question. Yeah. Are those going to be pulled into this? ABC still has a contract, I think, with Hulu, because I think they're partial owners with, I think ABC, NBC and Fox all have partial ownership of Hulu. I think CBS is the only one that does not have a stake in it. And okay. That's why CBS shows aren't on that. So there's, I think there's probably some contractual stuff behind the scenes that needs to be worked out for that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure some of those contracts may not get renewed when they come due.
You know, I forgot about that. The fact that Disney owns ABC and now they also own Fox. So they own 50% of the four primary television networks. Interesting.
Don't tell your regulatory bodies. I think that's not allowed. Yeah. I think it's called a monopoly.
Keep it hush.
But anyway, if they were to bring in all those other shows into their streaming service, I think it would do extremely well. But if it's not, then I don't know how that's going to go. It's going to maybe end up like this CBS streaming service.
Yeah, that, CBS All Access.
Yeah, it's signed up for a month. See, we don't have that in Canada, so I didn't even bother with it. They just put Star Trek on cable, and we moved on.
Nice. Oh, more reasons to move to Canada. But even if they put ABC and Fox content on the streaming service, we still go back to, if I'm already getting that on my cable service anyway, unless I'm going to cut the cord, which for a lot of people, we're still not quite there yet, then is it still worth it for the streaming service? What new content is going to be on this? And so I think that that's where they have an opportunity for something like this and for Marvel stuff too, whether it be animated or live action, to really take advantage of that. If you're concerned about oversaturation due to volume, that's what the streaming service is for.
Have they announced a price for it yet?
Not officially.
I heard the only rumor or talk about price was it was going to be less than Netflix.
Yes. So, it is supposed to be substantially less than Netflix.
So substantially less, in my eyes, would be, say, $4.99, $5 a month.
I imagine that's reasonable. I think that would be the low end of it. Yeah. I'm going to say it's going to be between $5 and $8.
In the U.S., do you have multiple tiers for Netflix costs?
Yes.
Okay, we do here as well. So I wonder if they'd pull that as, like, okay, for $4.99 you get standard definition. For $7 a month, you get 1080.
I don't know if they'll do that, just because I think Netflix is the only streaming service that does do that. HBO Go doesn't have different tiers. Hulu does not. Amazon Video does not. I think Netflix is the only company that really does that. And you have to keep in mind, I mean, Fred, you can understand this. There's a technological overhead on that too. If you're going to start splitting bandwidth based on account levels, then there's a whole other aspect of network management that has to happen too. So there's got to be a cost involved there as well. Plus an additional customer service hurdle. Hey, I signed up for the higher tier, but I'm not getting it in high def, or I can only stream it on two devices instead of the four that I'm supposed to get. I don't think that Disney is going to do that. I think Netflix can, because it's the juggernaut.
Yep.
And I think that they can make enough money off of those premium tiers to justify the additional work it's causing them. I don't think Disney's there yet.
That being said, okay, so we go back to the $5 price point or a $6 price point. Is it low enough for you to go, yeah, I'll get it, I don't care. It's only $5 a month. It's a coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for most people it is.
So.
I mean, again, it depends on, I mean, CBS All Access really has been the litmus test for this. Star Trek Discovery. I want to say it's $6.99, I think.
Okay.
And CBS has a lot of really good shows. And it's got a lot of top tier shows. I think it's got NCIS and it's got Big Bang Theory and Star Trek Discovery. But Star Trek Discovery is the main new show that they have that you can only get by streaming, at least here in the US. And so what a lot of people did is they signed up for that first free month. They continued into the second month until Star Trek Discovery was done, and then they canceled.
Yep.
And I did too, because there's no longer any benefit for me having that channel, because I already get CBS as part of my satellite subscription through DirecTV. Yep. Why am I going to pay additional if I want to stream an episode or two of something I forgot to record on the DVR? It would be cheaper for me to go buy those individual episodes I'm missing from iTunes on a per episode basis, which I hate doing, but it would still be cheaper than me maintaining a subscription to CBS All Access for an extended period of time. So that's the thing. CBS All Access has failed in that they have not had enough compelling new content that's exclusive to that to be able to keep people going.
Do you have on demand down there?
Yes.
Like, for example, on our PVR, if I miss an episode, I can go back a couple of weeks through my DVR to just stream it through the television provider. Okay.
But it also depends on the contract as well. So for some networks, some shows are available for on demand.
Yeah.
But other shows are considered too important, and so they want you to pay per episode.
Well, which is fine, but I'm just saying that that also gives credence to why would you need an on-demand service or CBS All Access.
Right. So, right.
Making it worth even less.
Yeah. So, I mean, the good news is with Star Wars, we are getting, I mean, Resistance is going to start airing on Disney XD because the streaming service isn't around yet, and that's fine. But I imagine that in the future, we might end up getting it exclusive future seasons to the streaming service. We're going to get The Mandalorian. I guess we're getting Star Wars Detours.
Yep.
It'll be the exclusive home of upcoming Star Wars movies. I think anything after Solo, so episode 9 and on, I think it should be just on the streaming service. So it sounds like they've got enough content to nail the Star Wars fans. So that's good.
Did they announce when this is coming out? Say, Google it now.
Next year. It's changed back and forth. They haven't been very specific about it. And so the unofficial reports have kind of fluctuated a bit. But I don't think they've given an official release date or anything. So.
To begin operations in 2019. That's all it says. Okay.
Now, the flip side of that is that The Mandalorian only has 8 to 10 episodes. So you could argue it could fall into that Star Trek Discovery trap.
Yep.
But then hopefully they'll release Detours. But then Detours, I don't think, is going to be enough to hold people there. I think they'll have enough content to hold the Star Wars fans, it's going to be the more casual viewers, I think, that they're going to have a rough time with. But anyway, what do you guys, in closing here, what do you guys want to see going forward with Star Wars stuff? It sounds like both of you still prefer the one movie per year sort of format. Yes.
Yeah. I think on the big screen, I would love to see a Star Wars Christmas every year, early December. I would love to see more and more content, obviously, coming to the streaming service. I'm going to take as much content as I could get.
Right.
The only one that I really haven't followed that closely was Forces of Destiny, which has been the YouTube featurettes. But I really hope that they do release most of their content in a single place like the streaming service. I think that'll be a lot easier.
Yeah. Andrea, you agree with all that?
No, I do. But again, I stand by if the quality is going to be sacrificed just to release every single year, then I don't want it that way. I want something that is unique and original, and they're not just writing to write.
Right. So. Yeah. I mean, quality obviously has to be king. Beyond that, I don't know. I'm still on the fence. I think if we get a lot of new content on the streaming service, I would be okay with getting theatrical releases every other year.
Yeah. And that's where I like the story coming out every other year and the anthologies in between.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
I thought that model was working really well. Obviously they just bumped up the last one early, but
yeah.
If they kept that going, I think that would work really well.
Okay. So we do still want to see the anthology movies then, yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. What about if we gave up the anthology movies for the sake of alternating between Rian Johnson's trilogy and having those interspersed with the Benioff and Weiss series? Would you want to have two concurrent series going, or do you want to have one series with standalone films in between them as opposed to two concurrent series? Or do you care?
I would love the idea of having the alternating two series every other year. I think that would be fantastic.
Okay. Andrea?
It might be a little bit confusing. I would like something that's completely different from what a trilogy or a movie is setting out to be. I don't know. If you take a look at it, and I do not like comparing Marvel and Star Wars, you do have them doing sort of those things where you have Iron Man and its own movies, you have Guardians of the Galaxy and their own movies, and they're kind of like intertwined in this whole entire mosh posh of movies. I don't know. They would have to be extremely unique, extremely different, so that they don't feel like we're just in the same place at the same time all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's also the danger of brand confusion, too, I think, with two concurrent series. Like, as a Star Wars fan, I think I would enjoy it. I'm not sure whether it would be the best business decision or not. I think that the standalone films, there was already some brand confusion with those. I was kind of skeptical about it at first, but when I started hearing people ask about Rogue One and why the Empire built a third Death Star now, and didn't they just do Starkiller Base? So now this is a fourth Death Star, and who are all these new people, and where's Luke Skywalker? Like, I think that people probably kind of get it now, but I think that people sometimes underestimate how brand confusion can be a problem sometimes. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about that, but I think I'm more frustrated about the fact that they announced the two trilogies / series, and we know that they're both coming, but chances are one of the two we're not going to get for like a decade. Like, I wish they just kept their mouth shut rather than giving us something to look forward to, that one is going to have to come before the other. So whichever one comes second, unless they do it concurrently, and I don't know if they will, it's like I feel like we're going to have to wait that much longer for whichever one is in second place.
Yeah.
And so, that being said, if they go back to that well of doing the Kenobi movie and the other anthology movies on top of all that.
Yeah. Boba Fett. It's okay. You can say Boba Fett. The Boba Fett
movie. Do you think that they jumped the gun in announcing those things and they kind of regretted it?
Well, if they did jump the gun.
This is everything we're going to give you. We're going to tease everything. And then, no, sorry, we need to take it back a little bit because we just can't do this all at once.
Technically, they're not taking anything back because nothing's been canceled. All these things are still happening.
Not taking it back as in, like, we're not going to do it, but kind of like, I'm going to give you this, but you're not going to get it for a couple years.
I mean, we created this problem, though.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they wouldn't be making these announcements if, A, we weren't begging them hourly for new information, and B, if we weren't constantly going through market insider information to find out who's been signed on for different contracts and stuff like that. I mean, Benioff and Weiss had to sign a contract with Lucasfilm in order to get on for these movies. There are industry insiders who acquire that information and it gets leaked out. And then there are all of us fans who pounce on that. So do we blame them for announcing it when it would have gotten leaked like the next day anyway? So whose fault is it really? We're the ones that chase this information. We're the people who are such fans of these franchises that we record podcasts about them. So
not us.
No, not us. I mean, we're the good guys. It's all those other podcasts that are, you know.
Yeah, so, they're the crazy ones, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I get it. I don't fault them for making the announcements, but there is a side of fandom where it does kind of suck that you have to wait this long now. Whether it's the Rian Johnson trilogy that comes first, or the, I'll call it the B&W trilogy / series. Whichever one comes first, that's great. And whichever one comes second, we have to wait that much longer for it. I think the Johnson one's going to come first because I think there's been more movement and I think there's been more done on it. So I still think that's coming first. One last thing I want your opinion on, and we kind of skipped over this entirely. I think I didn't even write it in the show notes here. Episode 9 being split into two films. Okay. Rumored it was going to be 9 part 1, 9 part 2. Now they're rumoring it's going to be 9 and 10. Any thoughts? Good, bad?
I don't know.
Don't care.
Okay. If they call it part 9 and 1 and part 9.2, like, that doesn't even make sense.
That
ruins the whole entire DVD collection.
We already have a numbered series that started with 4.
Right. You don't need to split the numbers. I mean, that's the point of numbering. You just go to the next number.
There's more numbers in this pool. It's not like we have an 11 and we have to make a fit. Like, Rogue One could technically be 3.5 or 3.9 or 4.0 almost. Like, just,
but that's an exception. I mean that came out after those sequences were done and it's not part of the saga, so you don't need to number that. But yeah, I mean, that if you really had to say, like, you know, 3.5 or something, fine,
sure. And it fits. It works. I'm happy with that there. And Han Solo could be put into the mix at, what would that be, 3.4? Right?
Yeah. It'd almost be more like 3.6 and 3.9, I think.
Yeah, that's probably closer if you wanted to.
But anyway.
I'm going to be very careful with what I'm about to say next.
Because there are a lot of fans hovering over their keyboards ready to type you an email right now.
I can just hear them right now. they're just typing random chatter. I need to watch the three movies, actually the two movies, with Ray and blah, blah, blah. In order to see whether I like them or not, I don't like them at all. I there's just something there that I just don't like about the movies, and I'm just ready for it to be over.
Okay.
And again, I'm going to say that with an understanding of I haven't seen the movies critically and not just for enjoyment, for me to be like, oh, this is actually really good. I enjoy what I'm seeing. So I just want to wait until we do
the overviews.
Yeah, when we watch the movies and I can actually take a look at it and take it all in before I know whether I'm okay with the part one and part two.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Because right now I'm just like, no, get it over with and give me something completely different. Okay. But it might change. So
you are not the only fan who, and I'm not including the haters. The haters can just go jump off a cliff. But
oh, thanks. I don't get to do that. Good.
Well, you're not a hater, though. I mean, you're allowed to not like something. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with not liking everything in Star Wars. There's some books that I can't stand. A lot of people don't like the Ewok movies. I mean, we joke about them, but really, how is that any different from anything else? Are we required to like Caravan of Courage in order to be a diehard Star Wars fan? Do we have to say that the holiday special was good quality Star Wars content, or is it okay to say, no, it wasn't, and I don't like it, and I don't include it as part of my Star Wars fandom? It's okay to say that. Now, it might feel strange for someone to say that about the sequel trilogy, because it's obviously much more official than the holiday special, which isn't canon. But it's legitimate to feel that way. You can't tell people they can't feel that way about the movies.
And again, I feel like I've watched the other Star Wars movies so much more that there's more of that connection. I feel like I haven't watched these movies enough to be like, okay, I understand why they did this X, Y, and Z.
Right.
That comes
over time, too.
But that's the thing. Like, I feel like a lot of people that hate on these movies, they just go in with, like, I've seen it once or twice, and this is where I'm making my decision of whether I like it or not. Yeah. Whereas I'm accepting of my flaws and that I might have a biased opinion, and I want to wait to see if my feelings towards it change when I look at it in more of a critical lens.
Yeah.
They might even need to see the last one or last two to reflect on the whole, sequel trilogy,
right,
as a whole. That might influence your decision over episode 7 or 8.
Absolutely.
Based on what's coming.
That is absolutely correct. Yeah. I mean, if they had left things the way they were at the end of Empire Strikes Back, I don't think I would be as comfortable as I am with Empire Strikes Back without having Return of the Jedi, like without knowing that there's a satisfying conclusion there. Now I can go back and truly appreciate Empire Strikes Back for the genius that it was. But I remember, we talked about this in the Empire Strikes Back episode. I walked out of the theater as a kid and I'm like, what? What did I just watch? Like, aside from the little green elf with the speech impediment, I've got Han is frozen in carbonite, dead for all I know. I mean, as a kid, I thought, like, yeah, they froze him, but they like froze him like in a freezer, like he's dead.
Yeah.
And Luke's got his hand chopped off. Darth Vader and the Emperor, you know, they're off doing whatever. Like, the good guys lost. So that was hard to take at the time. I think it might not be until we get episode 9 and/or 10 before we can go back and appreciate the sequel trilogy. I'll say, back to the question about splitting episode 9 and 10, and this also relates into a little bit about my feelings about the sequel trilogy. Episode 8 for me, I really liked and really disliked at the same time. There were parts of it I love and parts of it I hate. So rather than kind of falling into one area on the spectrum, it hits both ends for me at the same time, depending on which scene we're in. So it's a unique Star Wars movie for me in that regard. But I truly feel like It's actually episode 7.5. And for that reason, for me, I would like to see them split episode 9 into two films, because I think there's still more storytelling that needs to be done in this trilogy right. for this trilogy to really feel like it can stand on its own as its own story. And I feel like there needs to be more development for Rey, although I like the development we've gotten for her so far. But I think there also needs to be more development for Kylo Ren. Mm-hmm. Definitely more development for Poe. And I honestly didn't feel like there was much development for Finn in episode 8. I think right. there were some important themes in episode 8. But again, I'm used to having Star Wars movies where there's a gap in time between the films. And that's what makes each one feel like its own story. And to me, this felt like 7.5. We walked away from Starkiller Base, and now we're in the high-speed car chase trying to get away. Well, that's just a continuation of the last film. It's like a really long epilogue. It's not really, it didn't feel like its own story. So I feel like if we got episode 9 and 10... then not only would we get more development because we'd have more time, but it would feel more fulfilling as a pseudo trilogy to me.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that, because going back to The Empire Strikes Back, that's one of the things that we commended it for. The fact that A New Hope, going into Empire Strikes Back, there is a disconnect between the two movies, and you're just thrown right. into the world, and you're just like, okay, like I need to learn what's going on so I know what's going to happen next. And yeah, we don't get that in episode 8. And there's a lot more questions than answers. And I think that that's the most frustrating part for me, that there's no closure in certain aspects of the movie. If they're going to be extending it into two movies, not if, they are, I think, right?
Well, no, it's not official. It's not official. Okay.
If they do it, I really do want it to be wrapped up nicely.
Yeah.
Like with love and care, maybe a bow on it.
I agree. They need to, even if they want to continue the story of Rey, Finn, and Poe, they do need to give this block, if we want to call it that, a conclusion. They really do. If they don't, then I feel like fans are going to feel cheated, legitimately so, in regards that they're telling a story where there's no end of the story. But and I say that because the stories need to feel like they're their own cohesive stories. If you look at a book series, yeah, you can have 10 or 12 books in a series or something, but if the books can't stand on their own as their own stories, I don't like it. You should have just made the book longer.
Yeah.
So
yep. I agree.
And so far, all of the Star Wars movies have felt like their own movies, except to me, episode 8 felt like it was just spillover from episode 7.
The deleted cuts that couldn't make it into the first one yeah. because they ran out of time.
It's like a 2.5 hour long post credit scene from episode 7. So, and the prequel trilogy had a very definitive closure to it. The original trilogy did as well. I would like to see this trilogy / quadrilogy also have a definitive end, even if we then continue on with those characters later on. This story needs to have closure. Mm-hmm. So
I don't think they have enough time to do it in 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
That's
I don't think so either.
That's the thing.
I really don't.
It'll feel rushed. I mean, look at episode 3. Even George Lucas himself feels that episode 3 was rushed.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And even though I want it to be over, if it's going to be crappy, then I don't want it. And I'll just endure the two again. I still need to watch the movies again, but if they're going to round it off extremely well, and it's going to take two movies to close all those ends that were not closed and answer all the questions that we still have, then I'm completely okay with that. I agree. 2 hours is not enough.
And to be clear, there's nothing wrong with having questions at the end of episode 8, because like I just got done saying, we did it Empire as well.
Right.
That's natural. And we did at the end of episode 2 as well. We had the formation of the clone army. We had a lot of questions coming out of episode 2. It's okay for that middle episode of a trilogy to introduce a bunch of questions. There, you know, that's fine. But yeah, I agree with you, Fred, that if we're going to get answers to those, and Andrea, if they're going to be satisfying answers, I think we need 2 films to really wrap things up and feel like we're getting the quality out of it. Now, all that being said, though, Andrea, I think that when we go back and look at episodes 7 and 8, I think that you will be able to find things in those films that you will appreciate.
I think so. I felt like the first time I saw it, I was just so frustrated with it.
Yeah.
It didn't take away of the fact that it's Star Wars and I love it, but I was very frustrated. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Maybe I won't break my laptop. We'll treat it nicely.
Don't break your laptop. Breaking your laptop won't change the movies. There's no,
that's true.
No reason to cost yourself money over it. Well, we are going to be covering Return of the Jedi next, and then we're going to be hitting episodes 7 and 8. So we don't have too much longer to wait. I look forward to discussing 7 and 8. I've really wanted to kind of tear apart 8 for a while now, as a comprehensive look at the film and actually analyze it. Cause I think that while there's a lot of things in there that I regret them having done, I think there's a lot of really good stuff in there too, that I appreciate. Things that a lot of people don't like that I think were done well. So we'll see.
Is Bob Iger gonna come with a statement saying that he was the one that did the whole entire Finn and what's the girl's name?
Rose?
Yeah. The Finn and Rose cheesy Disney stuff.
The whole thing on Canto Bight.
I'm waiting for that one now.
we'll talk about Canto Bight when we get to episode 8. We're gonna save that.
We'll call that a teaser.
Well, that's it for this episode. Yeah, we're running. I think this is the longest episode we've done so far, but that's okay. Do we have a movie pitch?
Of course.
We have a movie pitch.
You keep, every time I ask that, you say, of course. I keep waiting for the week where they're like, oh, actually, we don't have one.
No, we
this
like
week.
To torture you.
Well, that I know.
Well, we did things a little bit different this time.
Uh-oh.
So you've made some references to it in the past where you like what if scenarios. So we came up with a what if scenario.
Okay.
So sticking to the original theme that we opened with tonight, The Mandalorian, we want you to pitch what is Eric's version of the Mandalorian if there was no other Mandalorians like from Legends or from the EU. What is Mandalorian? How would you run the story?
Now, when you say if there were no other Mandalorian, you mean like if he were the last Mandalorian left, or are you saying if there was no lore about Mandalore to refer to?
Yeah. Hmm. So no lore outside of the EU, or sorry, out of like what's already been written in canon.
All right. So I can basically pick whatever I want. So we know that there have been a few different variations of Mandalorian lore already. I'm going to say that if I were going to pitch something like this series with no regard to what's come before, assuming that I'm still allowed to pick and choose things if I want to.
Yes, of course.
Okay. So I would stick with the Mandalorians in general being kind of a guild of mercenaries and bounty hunters. And I think it would be interesting to have this new Mandalorian character be a Mandalorian in the sense that he's part of this guild that Boba Fett had belonged to. And we can even keep the Jango Fett thing in there as well. but the Mandalorians are a group of a brotherhood, a guild where you have to get into it. You really have to be the best of the best. There is a culture to it. There is almost a tribal sort of sense. Not so much anything like what we saw in the Clone Wars, more akin to what we initially started to see in Legends early on with Jaster Mereel and the Journeymen Protectors and things like that. But I would like to see this Mandalorian character maybe go rogue and having done something to upset the rest of the group, and maybe being cast out or maybe even hunted by them for some sort of violation of their code or something like that. I would look at the Mandalorians as this strict, almost like a mafia sort of thing, but less about organized crime and more about kind of going under the radar. But one of those organizations where you don't leave. Like yeah. if you join knowing that this is going to be it for the rest of your life, kind of like the John Wick sort of scenario.
Right.
So I would like to see this Mandalorian maybe out on his own, whether he or she is out on their own because they disagreed with some of the things the Mandalorians were doing. And they still want to continue being a Mandalorian, but with more integrity or something than the other group had, or maybe they just said, no, I'm done with this sort of lifestyle, and they're out on their own and they're using their skills that they learned as a Mandalorian to kind of stay alive. But I would like to see this as kind of a cat and mouse sort of thing where they're both kind of in an episodic sort of storytelling thing where they go from place to place and you know, they get caught up in whatever shenanigans and have to find ways out or help other people or whatever, but also while constantly being hunted by the other Mandalorians.
That sounds like the A-Team.
Yeah. It does kind of sound like the A-Team. Now, the big difference would be that when people shoot on this show, they actually hit things.
That would be an important piece. Yeah.
That would be an important difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that would be, listen, I think that Dave Filoni came up with some really interesting concepts for Mandalorians for the Clone Wars. And I appreciate those and I enjoy those, but I can enjoy those without those being my preference. Mm-hmm. My preference was more like what we saw in the Legends novels, I think. And I'd like to stick with something closer to that, I think. But that's what I would like to see from the Mandalorian show.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it and see how it actually plays out.
Me too. I'm bummed that it's going to take so long. I wish we got this now and Resistance was what we were getting later on.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. But that's okay. Listen, if you guys have comments, questions, anything that you want to talk about. I know we talked about a lot of different topics in this episode, but we do want to hear what you think on these topics. So email us at outerrim@randomchatter.com. You can find us on Twitter at ForceChatter or at RandomChatter. You can also talk to us in Discord. I'll come back to that in just a minute too. But Fred, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at FreddyWonKenobi. That's FreddyWonKenobi.
All right. And Andrea, where can we find you?
You can find me at KatzBears. That's KatzBears.
All right. And you can find me at Eric Blythe. That's ErikBlythe. You can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. We mentioned Echo Base. I've gotten some requests to bring back Aren't You a Little Short for a Podcast? And I actually have a rig that I can use to record while I'm in my car. I've got a personal portable recorder. I've got a headset dynamic microphone, and I've got 3 hours every day in the car. So I'm tempted to experiment with that. Wait a second.
If you're going to do that, you have to do a sing-along for one of the episodes. Have you ever watched the Goofy movie? I think it's called On the Open Road or something like that, where like Goofy's son and him are on a road trip and then he's singing while they're in traffic and he's like dreading it. You have to sing that song.
So basically
you want
me
in your car.
You want me to do my own carpool karaoke minus the carpool.
That would be so much fun. I think everybody from the staff should do one.
I don't know that like we could release that. There's probably licensing concerns or something.
Oh,
plus you don't
want
to hear me sing. I don't know. We'll see what we can do, but
by the way, before you continue,
yes.
We are almost ready for the Star Wars Commander team thingy to start.
Guilds?
So we'll be letting everybody know on, yeah.
Team thingies. Just do a Google search for team thingies.
Blame my cold. the squad. So we're going to be announcing the name on Discord soon, I guess.
On Discord. So what you're saying is that people should probably join the Discord server.
Oh my gosh. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. All right. Well,
that's
in
what
order
we
to
get that, Eric.
Yeah. I guess that would be a good way to join the squad in the game then. I guess people should probably head over to randomchatter.com/discord, where they will have a link that will drop them right into our Discord server. Of course, we've got different channels for each of the shows on the network. So this information will be in the Outer Rim channel, probably also in the gaming channel that we have available for our Patreon donors. And the general Star Wars channel that we have available for our Patreon donors. And you see, we make the Discord server available to everybody for free. And all of those different channels for each of the podcast shows, everybody can access. And there's a lot of great conversations that go on there all the time. And we highly recommend you check it out. But we want to give something back to the people who help support the network financially, even if it's just $1 a month. We appreciate that. And so we have created a lot more channels in Discord. I haven't counted in a while. I know we've rotated through and archived some old ones and introduced some new ones. And I think we're still around 50 or 60 additional channels. But for Star Wars, just the Star Wars category alone for Patreon, we have a general Star Wars channel. We've got a channel just for the books and comics for Star Wars. Now that Solo's been out on DVD for a while, we probably need to retire that one. We have one for the Clone Wars, which is something we didn't talk about in regards to the streaming service, but they're bringing Clone Wars back. We have one for Resistance. We have one for the Mandalorian show. And we had a couple of people who wanted to talk specifically about Star Wars Legends and go back through the entire archive of Star Wars Legends and talk about the different characters and events and stuff like that. And there was so much conversation going on, we had to split it off into its own channel. So there's a Star Wars Legends channel as well. And that's not even including the spoiler group of channels that we have. So we've got a Star Wars book spoilers, Star Wars comic spoilers, and we're going to have Resistance spoilers and Mandalorian spoilers and stuff like that. So there are going to be channels for those as well. There's a lot of extra content. If you're not donating to us through Patreon, it's for $1 a month. I got to say, it's worth it just to be able to hang out and take part in some of these conversations. There's a lot of great stuff there. So for more information on that, go to randomchatter.com/Patreon. And finally, the music you hear in this podcast is the Cantina Band finale by the absolutely incredibly awesome DJ Elliot, who I can't wait to get to see again at Celebration in April. And as silly as the sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care. It's a trap.